Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. On Call with the Prairie Doc airs on South Dakota Public Television and the Prairie Doc Facebook page each week at 7 p.m. Central Time on Thursdays. Tonight's program encourages viewers to ask anything. These are my favorite shows. And Dr. Rick Holm joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Dr. Holm, how are you?
Hi, Lori. I'm doing great.
Good. I want to start because... Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I'm in St. Louis.
Oh.
Joni and I flew to Southern California and then rented a car after visiting friends there and traveled our way up the coast. And we are now in St. Louis visiting. Seattle, Washington. I jumped through Washington University in my mind, but
yeah.
I am in Seattle, Washington, and we
nice.
Drove up the coast of California looking at that Highway 1 and staying in hotels looking out over the ocean, and it's been a delightful tour of the West Coast. How about that?
I spent a little time in school in Monterey, California, and took a trip up the Highway 1 Pacific Coast Highway and just drove that.
Oh, wow.
And that's an amazing thing to do. Yeah. Oh, good for you.
Yes.
We had a conversation earlier this week, and we thank you for taking time out of that lovely tour to talk with us today. We had a conversation earlier this week about seasonal affective disorder and took listener questions. And the questions really kind of grouped around this idea of supplements, and people were talking about seasonal affective disorder and insomnia. And we didn't have a doctor on the program. So I've saved these questions for you. And one of them was, if I take a melatonin pill to help me sleep and it contains ashwagandha for mood stabilization, could that affect my thyroid? So, and I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing ashwagandha correctly, but talk to us a little bit about melatonin. Yeah.
Melatonin is a reasonable sleep help, particularly with people who get out of whack when they're traveling east or west. And I have to admit to you that, when this whole illness kind of came upon me, I started taking 3 milligrams of a cheap, basic melatonin. And I've worked my way all the way up to 10 milligrams at night when I'm in, usually just 10 milligrams of melatonin at night to help with sleep.
Yeah.
I have a cool bedroom, do not have a television in our room. And when we go to bed, we're tired. And I'll read about 5 or 10 minutes, depending upon how sleepy I am, before I go to sleep. And when I'm dropping the book, then I put it down and I go to sleep.
Yeah.
And then the night when I wake up, if I do, I'll go back to my book. The ashwagandha or whatever it was, I have no idea. I don't know what it is. I don't know that it's worth the extra money. I would do the melatonin. And there's some strong scientific data that says that it really does help with sleep.
Is 10 milligrams the max for that?
Yeah, I don't think I'd go a whole lot more. I just don't know the answer to that really. But I have 3 milligram tablets and I have 5 milligram tablets, and so that's what I do.
And it goes back to this idea, and we emphasized this earlier in the week, that the answers to these questions are often dependent upon other medications, and so really have that relationship with your primary care doctor. And
you need to talk to your physician about it, or your nurse practitioner, PA. You don't want to, you don't go to an herbal store and buy what they say. I think it's important to talk to them.
Yeah. So ashwagandha is sort of billed as an ancient medicinal herb, and that gets to this question of, ingredients that we don't really understand. Also right. important to check with you. It's a mood stabilizer. It's sold as a mood stabilizer.
Yeah, I just don't know. I think you can make up anything you want and sell it. There's nobody restricting you from selling anything, as long as you say this is not a medicine. There's a certain line that you have to have on your label. And if you find a supplement, you read the supplement, it'll say it's not a and whatever the line is that you need to legally put on there if you're not going to sell it as a medicine.
Right.
And it's the same people selling the medicine. They're profiting. They're trying their best to make a profit. You can't blame them for that. But at the same time, I don't know what I'm going to put in my mouth when I'm buying a supplement. You just don't know. Nobody's watching over the doses. They're not checking on the amount of other stuff that could be in it. So that's part of the plus and the minuses of marijuana, for example. If you're going to jump into that whole question, you don't know what doses you're getting. You don't, you know, if you're buying from a non-medicinal state like Colorado. Minnesota has medicinal medicine marijuana, but it's expensive. There's that other side of the argument.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, because our state on the east does border Minnesota, and on the west it borders Colorado, and people are crossing the border to get CBD oil, to get marijuana at dispensaries. What are some of the challenges? And let's start with the west side for our west side listeners. In Colorado, going to the dispensary, that seems like a logical idea. It's legal to use it in South Dakota. We emphasize it's not legal to use it here, so we're not encouraging anyone to break the law. But I think people do have questions about, they're drawn to this notion of the promise of CBD oil.
Yeah. And CBD oil, I think there's been a judge who said, I'm not going to prosecute anybody for using CBD oil in the state. But I don't know if that's with every judge.
Right.
So we're a great big question mark in this state. I do know that I was giving a lecture on the issue of cannabinoids and CBD and marijuana, the sativa and the different brands and versions of THC and I think that there is something that has been very successful and useful with combining a little bit of THC and CBD, and that's coming from Colorado and some other states where it's legal. And people get relief from pain. Well, you know, if you look at what we're doing in this country about dangerous substances for pain, we have this year, 68,000 people died from suffocation from opioids and narcotics, the same as narcotics. And there's nothing close to that as far as cannabinoids. And so what is the problem with this? Why aren't we making some version of cannabinoids that we can show is relatively safe, and why aren't we going that way? And it's a mistake, because options for pain relief are pretty doggone limited. And when you get past Tylenol, the next step is the opioids. I think that that's a mistake. So you're missing something. So I would like to see this. Probably the oldest medicine in the world. Probably, you know, we've got something like 10,000 years ago, people were using this for medicine. This old ancient medicine, this real medicine that has been used for everything from chronic joint pain to headache pain to recreation to. That this medicine has been proven through the centuries not to be nearly as dangerous as the opioids, and it should have its place. And that's where I'm going to settle with my argument, that we need to look at it. I think it's a mistake to get the medicinal version legalized so that the FDA can find out what's in it. And you can document what's in it, at least that much, I think.
Yeah, and voters will be able to have their say again on the ballot in 2020 about a few different options, which we'll dig into on some future shows about what those options are and what that legislation sort of, or those ballot questions really say. One of my questions is, if somebody is interested in using these, can you talk to your doctor in South Dakota and say, what are the privacy rules? You know, when you go to your doctor, we always recommend tell them what supplements you're on. Can you walk in your doctor and say, I'm going to Minnesota or I'm going to Colorado and I'm using some CBD or what's the PhD or whatever. Yeah, what's the responsibility of the doctor? Yeah.
Yeah, never to betray the trust of the patient. So, I mean, you know, it's a privacy issue.
Yeah.
If it's illegal, one could argue, well, it's illegal. But my sense is that particular, any doctor who's worth her or his salt, it doesn't betray that trust. I do think that if you're doing something where you look like you're suicidal or you're homicidal and you're going to threaten somebody's life, that then the physician needs to call some people for help.
Yeah.
But I don't think that you'll find many doctors calling in. My patient had just mentioned that she or he might be looking at pain relief through a cannabinoid, so you should go after them. I don't think you'll ever find any of the doctors in the state. They may say, I don't agree with that. That's not legally appropriate for South Dakota. But I don't think they'll ever turn anybody in. I just don't think that's right.
Yeah. On the Ask Anything show tonight, what can people expect? How do they get their questions heard for the Prairie Docs Ask Anything episode?
We have one host and two guests that are physicians, generalists, who will be able to answer any question. You want to stump them, call them in a tough question. I'm going to miss that show, but I'll be back next week. But you want to ask them interesting questions, challenge them, and or if you've got there's some weird thing that's going on, call in.
Yeah.
What medical issues are bugging you or making you think, or you have had some questions about which you've had some questions. So you need to put on your thinking hats and get ready for tonight for an Ask Anything and see if you can get them on some kind of medical issue. Pretty much they're going to know everything about something about everything. You know, that's what a good generalist should do and should know.
Rick, I was at the bookstore the other day and I saw three books that basic topic was spontaneous healing. And I thought that has to be telling that there are that many books coming out of people saying, why do some people just get better? When does the body heal itself on its own? And what can we learn from these stories? That's my question.
Are you going to ask me that question right now? Can I answer it?
Sure, please.
The body is a magnificent healing a cathedral. And if you use an antibiotic like tetracycline or the majority of antibiotics, many antibiotics, you end up holding the bug still while the body kills the bugs. It isn't the antibiotic that is successful. It's the body that does it. A good, healthy person who is regularly exercising and eating a balanced diet and has friends and is connected and feels meaning in his or her life, you know, that's and you're relatively young, that's an unbelievably powerful piece of equipment. And the human being can heal itself spontaneously with those for the majority of time. With those three components, you know, with an exercise program that's regular, with a diet that's a balanced diet that has good fruits and vegetables and comes from every part of the grocery store. And the third is a component of connectedness, the social component that makes us feel like there's a reason to live. And those three things can make a Fort Knox that can defend against any attack. And so I think there is truly spontaneous healing. And some of it, you know, they talk about pure of heart, or I don't know what else you would you'd say in those books about spontaneous healing. But I think that there's a spiritual component that has to do with that connectedness with other people, along with good wellness, just good wellness.
The body is a magnificent healing cathedral. I wrote that down. Thank you for that. Dr. Rick Holm, thank you for joining us on the phone today. We appreciate your time. Enjoy that California and Washington West Coast weather.
All right, Lori. Thank you so much.